Adi. Gopi jana balabha giribhra jari. Jasod nandana praja janaranjana. Jasod nandana braja janaranjana. Jamana tira vana chadi. Jamana tira vana chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading, there's three texts together, 15, 16, and 17, from Canto 7, Chapter 10. Shri Prarada Uvacha Varam Varya Etate Varadeshan Maheshwara Yad Anindat Pitame Tvam Avidvangs Teja Aishwaram. Shri Parada Uvacha Varam Varaya Etatte Varadeshan Maheshwara Yad Anindat Pitame Tvam Avidvangs Teja Aishwaram. Parada Uvacha Varam Varaya Etatte Varadeshan Maheshwara Yad Anindat Pitame Shri Parada Uvacha Varam Varaya Etatte Parada Uvacha Varam Varaya Etatte Varadeshan Maheshwara Yada nindat pita me. Tom avidvangs teja aishwaram. Ladies. Diparada ovacha. Varam varaya etat te. Varadeshan maheshwara. Yada nindat pita me. Tom Advid Bhangs Teja Aishwaram. Sri Parada Ovacha. Varam Varaya Etat Te. Varadeshan Maheshwara. Yadanindat Pitame. Tvam Avidvangs Teja Aishwaram. Sri Parada Ovacha. Varam Varaya Etat Te. Varadeshan Maheshwara. Yadanindat Pitame. Tvam Avidvangs Teja Aishwaram. Sri Parada Ovacha. Prahlad Maharaj said, Varam, benediction. Varaye, I pray. Etat, this. Te, from you. Varada Ishat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who offers benedictions even to such exalted demigods as Brahma and Shiva. Maha Ishvara, O my Supreme Lord, Yat, that, Anindat, vilified, Pita, Father, Me, my, Tvam, you, Avidvan, without knowledge of, Tejaha, strength, Aishwaram, supremacy. And then there's two more verses, so I'm just going to read the translation of these three verses and the purport. Prahlad Maharaj said, O Supreme Lord, because you are so merciful to the fallen souls, I ask you for only one benediction. What's his one benediction? He wants mercy for his father. I know that my father at the time of his death has already been purified by your glance upon him. But because of his ignorance of your beautiful power and supremacy, he was unnecessarily angry at you, falsely thinking that you were the killer of his brother. Thus he directly blasphemed your lordship, the spiritual master of all living beings, and committed heavily sinful activities directed against me, your devotee. I wish that he be excused for these sinful activities. And purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although Hiranyakashipu was purified as soon as he came in contact with the Lord's lap, and the Lord saw him, Prahlad Maharaj still wanted to hear from the Lord's own mouth that his father had been purified by the Lord's causeless mercy. Prahlad Maharaj offered this prayer to the Lord for the sake of his father. As a Vaishnava son, despite all the inconveniences imposed upon him by his father, he could not forget his father's affection. Pretty amazing. The compassion of a Vaishnava is remarkable, and the power of the personality of Godhead, similarly remarkable. The verse from yesterday, with nice long purport, was discussing the power of remembrance of the personality of Godhead. So we know from nectar devotion, there's 9 processes of devotional service, also from Srimad Bhagavatam, and each one of the 9 processes, there's someone who exemplifies the perfection of that process and achieved perfection through that process, and that's Prahlad. Prahlad is one of them for remembrance. Vishnu Smaranam. And we know that Vishnu Smaranam comes from the activity is from hearing and chanting. We discussed yesterday the importance of the hearing and chanting process. And in course of hearing and chanting and hearing and chanting, sustained over time, nirahantarya is the Sanskrit phrase used for continuous hearing and chanting. Then following that purification comes a stage of taste for the activity of hearing and chanting, and eventually attachment. And naturally that which we're attached to is what we think of. So the stage of constant remembrance in part is from constant practice, but it's a further advanced stage for sure, stage of attachment. And Prahlad was beyond the stage of attachment. He was the stage of pure devotional service. So in the case of Hiranyakashipu, he was also thinking of the Supreme Lord, remembering the Supreme Lord, not in a nice way, as an enemy. And because of that mentality, even he was face to face with the Supreme Lord, he was unable to recognize him as the Supreme Lord. I'm going to read from Adi Lila, chapter 5, text number 36, I believe it is, 35, 36. In this section, the discussion is going to the region of Siddha Loka, which is the spiritual sky, and all that's in the spiritual sky, not just the Brahma Jyoti, but the planets, Vaikuntha planets. It's Siddha Loka, beyond the material nature. So there's an aspect of Siddha Loka that's the Brahma Jyoti that has no spiritual variegatedness. It is like the homogeneous effulgence around the sun. But inside the sun are the chariots, horses, and other opulences of the sun god. That's verse 34. And quoted from 7th canto, next, verse 34, as through devotion to the Lord one can attain his abode, many have attained this Siddha Loka region by abandoning their sinful activities and absorbing their minds in the Lord through lust, envy, fear, or affection. So that the destination The spiritual sky is the destination of those who have become free from their sinful activities. Now, going back to what Prahlad is saying, I know that my father has been purified by your glance, and more than that, also in the purport, by being on the lap, by being handled by the Supreme Lord, he became purified. So the sinful activities part was gone, and his mind had become attached to the personality of Godhead, in part, large part, due to anger, as we heard, feeling that my father's brother has been killed by Lord Vishnu, so Vishnu is my enemy, I want to kill my enemy. So then the verse in purport for text 36 quote from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and same topic is spoken about in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. By the way, Vaisheshika Prabhu told me that the BBT is about, it's at the printer now, that Laghu Bhagavatamrita translated, and with, I guess, some commentary by the Govardhan Sanskrit school. And in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, the topic of the same topics, according to Jiva Goswami, the same topics as discussed in Krishna Sandarbha are discussed in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, meaning specifically the unique position of Krishna. Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam, the unique position of Krishna amongst all the forms of the Lord. So that's discussed here. The verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu reads, where it has been stated that the Lord's enemies and devotees attain the same destination, this refers to the ultimate oneness of Brahman and Lord Krishna. This may be understood by the example of the sun and the sunshine, in which Brahman is like the sunshine and Krishna himself is like the sun. So the devotees and demons attain the same destination. That is, this Siddhaloka region. But then there's the Brahman feature and there's the Bhagavan feature within this vast Siddhaloka. The purport reads that Rupa Goswami, when he discusses this topic in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, he refers to a discussion between Parashramuni and Maitreya from Vishnu Purana, and in that exchange, Maitreya wants to understand more about Jai and Vijay, how they came, where they went, etc. The Parashramuni. How is it that Hiranyakashipu next became Ravana and enjoyed more material happiness than the demigods, but did not attain salvation, although when he became Shishupal, quarreled with Krishna and was killed, he attained salvation and merged into the body of Lord Krishna? So the question is clear? Prahlad, you understand the question? What was the destination of Hiranyakashipu? Because that's what's here. What was the destination of Hiranyakashipu in contrast with later he became Ravana and later he became Kamsa, Shishupal, and then merged into the body of Krishna? Why these differences? of situations after they're being killed. Parashara replied that Hiranyakashipu failed to recognize Lord Nrsingadev as Lord Vishnu. He thought that Lord Nrsingadev was some living entity who had acquired such opulence by various pious activities. Being overcome by the mode of passion, he considered Lord Nrsingadev an ordinary living entity, not understanding his form. Nevertheless, because Hiranyakashipu was killed by the hands of Lord Nrsingadev, in the next life he became Ravana, and he had proprietorship of unlimited opulence. As Ravana, with unlimited material enjoyment, he could not accept Lord Rama as the personality of Godhead. Therefore, even though he was killed by Rama, he did not attain Sayuja, or oneness with the body of the Lord. In his Ravana body, he was too much attracted by Rama's wife, Janaki, and because of that attraction, he was able to see Lord Rama, but instead of accepting Lord Rama as an incarnation of Vishnu, Ravana thought him to be an ordinary living being. When killed by the hands of Rama, therefore, he got the privilege of taking birth as Shishupal, who had such immense opulence that he could think himself a competitor to Krishna. Although Shishupal was always envious of Krishna, he frequently uttered the name Krishna and always thought of the beautiful features of Krishna. Thus, by constantly thinking and chanting of Krishna, even unfavorably, he was cleansed of the contamination of his sinful activities. When Shishupal was killed by the Sudarshan Chakra of Krishna as an enemy, his constant remembrance of Krishna dissolved the reactions of his vices, and he attained salvation by becoming one with the body of the Lord. And there's a long purport that follows that too. So Prahlad's compassion was, as mentioned, although he already knew that by contact with Lord Nrsingadev, his father was freed from the reactions of his unlimited volumes of sinful activities, he just wanted to hear it directly. And that's where his compassion went to his father. And specifically, the statement is, cultured as he was, or Krishna conscious as he was, although he was subjected to so many inconveniences like death threats and so forth, he could not forget his father's affection, because the affection of Hiranyakashipu, of course, was significant. It was eclipsed by his enmity towards Vishnu, but fatherly affection for his son was natural. Now, a little bit about why was it, it's right in the purport, why was it that Hiranyakashipu was unable to understand the divinity of the personality of Godhead who was standing before him? Even before standing before him, that the divinity of his son, specifically the power of bhakti, he saw the display of the power of Prahlad's bhakti, but he couldn't accept. There's in Harinam Chintamani, there's this comparison or metaphor in chapter 3 of Harinam Chintamani of the clouds of offense and the mist of ignorance that block the sun. Familiar? Yeah. So the sun is compared to the name. So in the sky of the heart, the holy name may appear because one hears and chants. So the sun of the holy name may appear in the sky of the heart. But if the sky of the heart is covered by the clouds that arise from offense and the mist that arises from ignorance, then the power of the holy name will be blocked by the blocking power of the mist and the clouds. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur itemizes there's different categories of ignorance. Ignorance is, the essence of it is, it's not being able to recognize something spiritual when in fact something is spiritual. Because one sees that something that's spiritual due to ignorance, and it's reinforced and further becomes implicating by offense. So there, these things that are, four things that are mentioned, the Lord, His name, the Chit Kana, the living entity, and bhakti. These four things in this world are spiritual, and when one comes in contact with that which is spiritual, if one has these clouds of anarthas arising from offense and the mist of ignorance, then even we're chanting, it's not going to, that there's a power in these things that block them. So that was Hiranyakashipu's situation. Prahlad, he had affection for his son, but his son showed affection not only for his father, but for Lord Vishnu, and that was intolerable for Hiranyakashipu enough that he was prepared to kill him. But when he saw event after event after event, the power of bhakti that was possessed by Prahlad, he couldn't accept it. He couldn't understand it. It was something spiritual. He could understand it was a power, just like we read from this purport. Hiranyakashipu thought, Lord Srinadeva is a human being, a living entity like me. He somehow got some powers, like I've got some powers. Perhaps he did some austerities, however he got those powers, and he's powerful, but I'm more powerful. I'll match my power against his power because he's a living entity and I'm a living entity. But he could not see the divinity, the spiritual position of Lord Srinadeva or the bhakti of Prahlad. This is the nature of the consequence of ignorance and offense, or becoming involved in sinful activity. It compounds the whole covered condition of the soul. I was appreciating from the Tattva Sandarbha material that I recently spoke about. Jiva Goswami willingly presents views that are opposing to a Vaishnava view, and there's some scholarly presentation that says that the Bhagavatam or all of the Puranas and Itihasas, they're not Vedic in the sense that they're a modern composition by somebody. They have different theories of who composed them. You know, at least Vyasadeva is not the eternal four Vedas. The four Vedas they accept are in a special category. And the things, the smritis that explain them, they're not Vedic. Without going through the whole subject matter of Tattva Sandarbha, very simply, Jiva Goswami shows number of references, not one or two, but a number of references where the Vedas say the Puranas and Itihasas are Vedic. They're as Vedic as we are. They're of the same quality as we are, although the language is different. So then one of the doubts, there's a number of them, but one of the doubts is that when Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas, divided them into four, he entrusted Brahmanas to be in charge of maintaining each of the four Vedas, but when it came to the Puranas and Itihasas, he placed a Pratiloma, not pure Brahmana, in charge. And in fact, the son of Romaharshan Sutta, named Sutta Goswami, we know him in that way from Bhagavatam, when he was speaking the Puranas, all 18, not just the Srimad Bhagavatam, when he was speaking them, in the audience were pure Brahmanas. So why is it that pure Brahmanas are listening to a non-Brahmana? And he gives the explanation that the Puranas have this special category, just as the holy name has this special category. That is, anyone can chant the holy name without consideration of birth and caste and, you know, material considerations. And he refers to some really beautiful verses, one from Skanda Purana that glorifies the holy name of Krishna as the mature fruit of all the Vedas. It's the perfection of all the Vedas. Very similar as Bhagavatam is compared, the Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam. It's the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. And then in his Sarva Sambhadani commentary, Jiva Goswami describes that normally, or previously, the chanting of the holy name is so powerful that only pure Brahmanas were advised to chant and would chant the pure holy name, because if you make offense against the holy name, it's also very powerful. And therefore he indicates those who chant the holy name should be very careful in guarding against offenses. Because while the holy name is very powerful, offenses are also very powerful and can block the like clouds and mist can block the sun. The power of the sun can be blocked by the power of clouds to block. One can see that there's sun because it's daytime, there's light, but there's not much heat when there's lots of clouds. We know that from experience. Even in summer, the clouds come and the temperature goes down. Humidity may go up, but temperature goes down. So there's a science to all of this, and that's the eradication of the mist of ignorance and the clouds of anarthas. The clouds of anarthas that arise most significantly from offenses against the holy name. There's other sources, but the others can be mitigated by the bhakti process itself, but the offenses against the holy name have a blocking power that if one doesn't free oneself from these 10 offenses, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one may chant the holy name for millions of lifetimes and not get the full benefit. So here's the situation where Hiranyakashipu, his seeing the power of bhakti of Prahlad, which he couldn't accept, or the beautiful form of the personality of Godhead, and the power of the personality of Godhead, but he couldn't accept. Face to face with the personality of Godhead, but he couldn't accept because of the blocking power of the offenses, which was exactly what Prahlad says. Although he saw he directly blasphemed your lordship, the spiritual master of all living beings, and committed heavy sinful activities directed against me, your devotee. But because of his ignorance of your beautiful power and supremacy, he was unnecessarily angry at you, falsely thinking that you were the killer of his brother. He was too much absorbed in his controlling feature, etc., becoming powerful, becoming, you know, his quest to become the supreme person in the universe. That's why he wanted to become immortal. I've taken over the kingdom of heaven. I'm on top of the world, and now I need to be as eternal. Then I'll be as good as God, because anybody else, including Vishnu, is just, you know, I'll defeat them, no problem. But I need to become immortal. That was his interest in immortality. He could become, in effect, the topmost being. So his God project was pretty dramatic. And the rest of us have much smaller ones. But the mentality of not accepting the supremacy of the personality of Godhead and the position of devotion of his devotees, and even for that matter, the spiritual position of all living entities, because they're particles of the personality of Godhead, not being able to see that way is due to the reasons mentioned by Prahlad. His offenses towards the personality of Godhead and his offenses against the devotee of the Lord. And so he couldn't see. His vision was blocked. However, because the merciful Lord nonetheless cast his glance upon Hiranyakashipu and touched him, placed him on his lap, and did all of what he did, shown in that nice picture over there, bifurcated his body with his nails, he was relieved of the reactions to his sinful activities. There's a nice section where this is discussed similarly, and I haven't had the time to study it properly yet, but from Bhaktisandarbha, where there Jiva Goswami discusses all of this, and he points to the example of Daksha. That apparently Daksha was relieved of the reactions to his offense to Lord Shiva, because he got this goat's head, and then he went to Lord Shiva and requested forgiveness, and Lord Shiva, being easily pleased, gave his forgiveness. But the tendency, the subtle root tendency, didn't go away. And so in his next life, he became Daksha Part 2, and he did the same thing again because the tendency was still there. He offended even worse. Narada Muni cursed him. Daksha. So the mentality of offensiveness doesn't die easily, even if Lord Shiva gives forgiveness. Or here in this case, if Lord Nrisingadev kills Hiranyakashipu, So he was relieved of the reactions of his sinful activities towards Prahlad and towards the personality of Godhead, but the tendency remained. So he became Ravana, according to this description. And, you know, he still had this spirit of being the enjoyer and being willing to put everything at risk because of his spirit of enjoyment, including being unable to hear, even from the best of advisors, his dearmost advisors, that he, you know, he shouldn't mess with Ram. It was just the wrong thing to do. And coveting Sita, give it up. He couldn't give it up. Lust was too strong. And his, the reactions of his offensiveness was still there. Or the mentality of offensiveness, I should say, was still there. The root tendency. It's not easy to give up such root tendencies. Maybe some of you remember during the summer there was some discussion. Himanshu requested I cover some topics in depth, so I covered the trance of Vyas, Canto 1, Chapter 7, verses 4 through, I think we just went through 7. There's two stages of bhakti that Jiva Goswami describes. I've been absorbed in Jiva Goswami, so you're hearing Jiva Goswami stuff. The first is where the sufferings of the living entities were mitigated. Yaya samohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. They're suffering because of their misidentification with the material covering made of the three modes of nature. But the process of bhakti serves to mitigate that suffering. And that's sadhana bhakti. Mitigating, the word that Prabhupada chose, means diminishing somewhat, relieving somewhat. That's the bhakti process. Kleshagni from Nectar Devotion, Chapter 1. One of the characteristics of pure devotional service, even in the sadhana stage, is it relieves suffering. It mitigates suffering. And then there's a further stage that's described later where one can see the personality of Godhead. And when seeing the personality of Godhead is the stage of prema bhakti. Now here we have Hiranyakashipu who saw the personality of Godhead, but it wasn't the stage of prema bhakti. Not at all. And so the tendency remained. Even he was fully cleansed, confirmed by the Supreme Lord in the next verse. He was fully cleansed of the reactions for all of his sinful activities. The tendency remained. He didn't come to the point of recognizing the personality of Godhead. At the moment of death, he was still thinking of, he's a living being like me, just a powerful guy, and I'm going to beat him because I'm more powerful than anybody. He couldn't recognize the personality of Godhead because that stage of prema bhakti hadn't arrived, and therefore the tendencies for offenses were still there, blocking his capacity to see. So those that take up this process of chanting and the devotional service that follows from the process of chanting should be very concerned. It's the instruction from scripture and through our acharyas. We must be very concerned about having proper sambandha gyan, proper understanding of what's what, so that we can get the proper benefit from our chanting and devotional service. And we must be very careful in guarding against the 10 offenses. Repeated and repeated and repeated, the 10 offenses. Not like being freaked out or fearful or something, but being properly educated and properly cautious, prudently, carefully guarding against those 10 offenses, because even the process may go on, the power will be blocked, will be prevented from achieving the full benefit that this gift of the Holy Name provides us. So the verse is just, that Prahlad speaks is just these three. He's asking for this benediction from Lord Nrisingadev. And then the very next verse tomorrow is Lord Nrisingadev's reply. It's already done. The benediction, I'll confirm, the benediction that you're asking for, it's already done. Your father has been freed from all of his sinful reactions. And not only that, we'll hear 21 generations of your forefathers. Just by your taking birth in the family, not even like, you know, that your father has been killed. Just by your taking birth in the family, they've been purified. So we'll discuss that tomorrow. Any comments or questions on this? Could you put your book somewhere else, like on your lap or in the bag or something? Thanks.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. My question is related to Prahlad's equanimity. He could forgive his father. And in the previous purport, Prabhupada quotes a verse from the Gita that says, we should be happy from happiness and distress. So my question is that it appears that being equal poise, like Kring Kunti, she didn't pray for equanimity, she prayed for distress. So sometimes it appears that equanimity could be a stumbling block to crying for Krishna, like Prabhupada says, we have to cry for Krishna when chanting the Maha Mantra. So can you explain that kind of contradiction? Like if I'm equal poise all the time, nothing disturbs me. It's like when you're feeling good in spiritual life, nothing disturbs you. It's kind of hard to cry out. So can you explain that a little bit?
Trying to capture what your question is. It seems like a contradiction. On the one hand, devotees are not disturbed by circumstances and remain peaceful. The other is to cry out for Krishna.
Yes, we hear both instructions.
Let me say back. Let me try to capture what you're saying. And on the other hand, we're encouraged to cry out for Krishna. And it seems to you that crying out for Krishna is dependent upon feeling really uncomfortable with your circumstances. So there's the contradiction. Did I get it? Okay. Well, one kind of crying out is crying about your circumstances. Another kind of crying out is that forgetfulness of Krishna is your circumstance. Not, you know, whether it's seemingly external favorable or externally unfavorable circumstance, but forgetfulness of Krishna. Even when we're chanting Krishna's name, so that the eagerness, intense eagerness, is that kind of crying out that make thought of Krishna be in my consciousness, not the circumstance should change, please. I cry out because I don't like the circumstances, I want better ones. That kind of crying out. To be in a sense of connectedness with Krishna, crying out for that. I'm sure you're familiar with the little passage that comes when Haridas Thakur is in Puliya and he's put in jail. And while he's in jail, there's other people in jail. And they feel, wow, this is great fortune. We're getting the association of a saint in jail. And so they're celebrating and crowding around Haridas, and Haridas says, I want to give you a benediction. May you stay like this. I said, what kind of benediction is that? We're in prison. Why are you saying this? He said, no, I don't mean may you stay in jail forever. In fact, he said that in a few days you're going to be released from jail. So the circumstance is going to change, but your dependence upon Krishna, may that not change. May you stay like this forever. That's the crying out for Krishna part. So whether in jail or out of jail, or whether in a tough circumstance or a nice circumstance, or whether this feature of duality or that feature of duality is there, the crying out for Krishna is to be connected with him, regardless of what the external feature of duality is. Okay. So, well.
Guru Maharaj, I wanted to ask you to see if you can speak a little more this very important point that you say that we should be pretty much concerned about this point of this tendency that is there for offenses that blocks, and I can see not only Krishna but so many things.
Four things. At least Bhaktivinoda Thakur identifies Krishna, Krishna's name, bhakti, and the living entity being spiritual manifestations in this world. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if I cannot see, then how I'm going to be able to correct the situation? I mean, sometimes, in my experience as a aspiring devotee, you go to so many phases in which you're just thinking you're going ahead, but you're not seeing things,
sure.
And you may be committing this offense or that offense.
Welcome to the club.
Catch 22 situation. What do you do?
Well, association, proper hearing, and continued practice. In Harinam Chintamani, when Haridas Thakur is describing the 10 offenses, one per chapter, and then describes the antidote for each of those 10 offenses, there's three things consistently in those 10 chapters describing the 10 offenses. The final one is constant chanting. Another is putting something on the other side of the pan scale, which is, say, if it's neglecting the orders of the spiritual master, it's carefully follow the orders of the spiritual master. You put something on the... You, recognizing there's such and such tendency, exaggerate and puts very strong emphasis on its opposite. And another, the third, is consistently, Haridas is very encouraging, just giving the glory of the holy name. So with faith in the glory of the holy name, which enables one to consistently or continuously go on chanting, the power is there. But one won't do that without faith. So he presents consistently the glories of the holy name that inspire us to do like that. So bringing our attention to the glories of devotional service, the glories of the holy name, or the glories of Krishna. And in our case in particular, the glories of those who are choosing to take a life of devotion to Krishna. So those souls, the Vaishnavas, they're special. And we may interact with them in different ways, but those souls are special. So hearing the glories of that which is spiritual. He does that consistently in those chapters. So those are ways. there's some it's both receiving and some sincere effort. Then it's possible. But you know, the predicament, it's not just in this lifetime, it's many, many lifetimes. You know, so many, too many lifetimes, bringing with us all this baggage, even before we take birth, even before we start devotional service. There's all this baggage. So your question is how to get overcome that. Those tendencies. Those are some instructions given in scripture how to do that. Given by Haridas, great Acharya. Right? Something else? Krishna Archana?
Sure, Rinpoche Swami, the that's a cloud of ignorance and anartas, you know, that you were describing. Hiranyakashipu was carrying in his heart. So, Prahlad Maharaj appears to have been detached through all the difficulties Father put him through.
Yeah. Detached.
Detached.
Big time.
And I guess the question is, you know, this verse is highlighting where he's asking for Lord Narasimha to excuse his father. I guess the question is, through that time of Prahlad Maharaj's detachment and the difficulties his father was putting him through, was there a kind of constant well-wishing for...
Was there a what?
A kind of well-wishing towards his father, and if so, would that not have made a dent in those anartas that his father was carrying?
Your question is, was Prahlad well-wishing towards his father despite all the harassment?
Yes, and then would that mood not have influenced the, or somehow made a dent in those anartas that his father was carrying? Just by virtue of
Would that have not influenced his father or
the anartas? Yes, would Prahlad's...
The father's sentiment? The sentiment his father should have been influenced by the affection of his son's well-wishing. That's your question?
Whether the, you know, the anartas, the ignorance that the father's carrying would have been broken down somewhat.
I think I got it. Well, you know, Hiranyakashipu was hardcore. You know, there's lighter demoniac, and there's medium demoniac, and there's heavy demoniac, and he was really thick and in the demoniac nature. So whether the well-wishing of his pure devotee son impacted him at all or not at all, we don't hear any description of that, but he was so hardcore, he couldn't, it bounced. At least externally. Now, internally, or you know, from Lord Nrisimhadeva's point of view, his appearance to protect Prahlad included the well-wishing of Prahlad upon his father, and you know, delivering him, simultaneously protecting Prahlad and delivering his father from the reactions of sins. Now, how he did that, like, you know, the method may be very different, thinking of what Narada Muni's well-wishing towards Nalakuvera and Manigriva, the form of it was very different, but the well-wishing was that let them become freed from this wickedness, this tendency that they have. So in that case, it was a curse. In this case, it was kill him with his nails. but relieve him of that, all that reaction. Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, is Siddha Loka is a spiritual planet?
Siddha Loka, there's two different, as far as I know, there's two different Siddha Lokas. There's a Siddha Loka that's within this creation, within the cosmic manifestation, where the Siddhas reside, those that have mystic powers. And then there's another Siddha Loka that's being referred to in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's the vastness of the spiritual sky. It's another application of the same term. And the spiritual planets. Primarily it's the Brahma Jyoti, but it's also indicating the Vaikuntha realm. So there's two Siddha Lokas. Which one's your favorite?
I think I was reading the same section, and in that section it was written that in that Siddha Loka, it is a spiritual planet, but there is no spiritual variegatedness.
No spiritual variegatedness.
Yeah.
But then you just... Should I read what comes after that? Let me read what comes after that. In that case, Siddha Loka is referring to the Brahma Jyoti, but what comes right after that? You're a real technical person. You like these technical questions. It's okay. I don't mind. The next verse. But inside, it is like the homogeneous effulgence around the sun, but inside the sun are chariots, horses, and other opulences of the sun god. Another term that's used in the purport is like, so we have Brahma Jyoti, we have Paravyoma, and we have Siddha Loka, all indicating that which is beyond this, the limits, the limiting influences of creation. Brahma Jyoti, Paravyoma, Siddha Loka. Within that Brahma Jyoti, Paravyoma, Siddha Loka, the Paravyoma is also the vastness of the spiritual sky and the planets within the vastness of the spiritual sky. So one can speak just about the Jyoti or Siddha Loka being the undifferentiated, homogeneous, spiritual effulgence, or it can also indicate, you know, the planets within that vastness of the spiritual sky. You going to ask it again third time? No? You usually do. Go ahead.
To the Romharsan Sutta, he was given the charge of Puranas and Mahabharatas. So, we ask, the Mahabharata is directly the instruction of Krishna to Arjuna. And the same thing was given to Romharsan Sutta. So why? What was the cause of despondency of Vyas then? Because it was full of Krishna and Arjuna, the story. So
I don't follow what you're saying.
Okay. He divided the four Vedas, Veda into four Vedas.
Yes, he did.
And the fifth Veda is Puranas and Mahabharata. He gave to Romaharsan Sutta.
Yeah.
And there, it seems that Mahabharata is full of stories of Krishna and Arjuna. It's an instruction of Krishna to Arjuna, probably though.
Is that a problem?
So then why the Narada asked him to do this work again, because Krishna was already there in that.
Oh, specifically it's in relation to insufficiently, you have not sufficiently glorified the personality of Godhead. So write one literature that just does that. Within Mahabharata there's all kinds of things, not just that. Specifically, because I just studied it, Jiva Goswami points out that in Mahabharata there's three sections that are very clearly, exclusively transcendental. There's a Narayaniya section, where Narayana, the glories of Narayana are described exclusively, verse after verse after verse after verse after verse after verse. And Vishnu Sahasranam, that section, and Bhagavad Gita section. And otherwise, there's so many other topics. That's not just the personality of Godhead. You have another one? You're good? Okay. Okay, I think we'll end. Oh, you have something? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. In this section, like, there is specific reference to forgiveness of his father. In my case, like, I don't feel I'm at that elevated stage as a practicing devotee of Prahlad Maharaj. So, what is our means of dealing on a practical level with other devotees? How do we practically learn how to deal with other devotees?
Okay, that's a nice question. Well, we can't. We're advised to not imitate, and it's not like that's not. It's exactly what your question is saying. I can't imitate. But how? So you cultivate. You have this luminary, example of what pure devotion is, and you recognize where you are, and not imitate but follow the example of such person, and to the capacity that you have, you follow the example of that luminary with faith that the process of bhakti will purify and gradually more and more elevate your consciousness to come closer and closer to that standard. And you recognize your own limitations. You may feel some regret for your limitations, but you act rather than just hover in regret or lamentation. You just honestly recognize your position. We had this whole one of the previous retreats in Gitanagari was exactly on this point: recognize and grow, recognize and go further. With faith and the process of bhakti, the process of bhakti is pure and purifying, and I'll gradually become purified by that process. So let me say, faithful to the process, and my capacity to be Prahlad-like will grow. Because it's innately there, it's just now covered, and it'll come. To whatever capacity Krishna wants to help me, I'll make my sincere effort, and I'm depending upon Krishna for his help. We'll end there. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. Narayana.